host, Crystal, in case you're new here. I'll be doing something a little different from the usual crime content today. Figured a nice palate cleanser from the past two episodes, this would be something fun to get into. We'll be going into some spooky tales with a hint of murder and crime. In my research, I found some super interesting stories and am super psyched to share them with all of you. But enough rambling for me. Grab your tea, coffee, or something cozy, and let's get into it. Our first spooky tale takes us all the way to Italy, where we visit the mountains of Cortenova. What is near the forest of Cortenova? The haunted Villa de Vecchi, aka the Red House, Ghost Mansion, or my favorite nickname, Casa de la Strega. Strega? Strega. The House of Witches. This villa was built between 1854 and 1857 as a summer home for Count Felix de Vecchi and his family. Vecchi was a head of the Italian National Guard and was literally considered to be a patriotic hero due to his role in the 5 Days of Milan. If you didn't know, the 5 Days of Milan was a revolution in 1848 that led to Milan being liberated from Austria. This was to be his dream home. He found just the man to help him with that, the architect Alessandro Sidoli. Now, the villa construction was nearly completed just a year to go, but unfortunately, Sidoli passed away unexpectedly. Now, many people later on say they viewed the death of Sidoli as the first bad omen of the villa. This, however, did not deter Vecchi, and he went on to use the villa as he intended, or so some accounts say. Now, this is where things get a little murky. In a majority of the accounts of this location, it is said that in 1862, Vecchi returned to the home after some traveling, presumably. Upon returning, he finds his wife brutally murdered and disfigured. Meanwhile, his daughter was nowhere to be found and was apparently kidnapped. He goes on to search for his daughter for a time, but to no avail. Not being able to locate his daughter, Vecchi then commits suicide in the home. Now, that's what I thought was what happened till I did some further research. In my further research, I found out that the whole thing was not true, which I guess is totally fine, just kind of killed the spooky vibes a bit. But still interesting nonetheless. So in fact, Vecchi actually did not move into the home with his family at all. He was already widowed at the point of using this villa. He was suffering from liver problems and actually passed away at the age of 46. Now there's still some more interesting stuff going on here. The property is left to Biago Vecchi, who is the brother of Count Vecchi. Biago did some renovating, getting rid of much of the previous decor. Till 1938, Biago and his descendants resided in the villa. After that, the villa would remain abandoned for the next 20 or so years. Now, the villa was still owned by Vecchi in the 1920s, and there's a rumor that the infamous occultist Aleister Crowley was said to have stayed at the home for a time. Now, this was never proven, although Aleister did spend some time in Italy, where he set up the Abbey of Thelema in Sicily. This rumor, though, caused many of Crowley's fans to come to the home to tag it, and there may or may not have been some ritualistic orgies and animal sacrifices, which I think probably did happen with all the hype around Crowley. So coming into 1959, after the property had been seemingly abandoned for 2 decades, it was purchased by Medici of Mergonano. They did not do any renovations, though, and property then fell to some local entrepreneurs. At this point, the house is a wreck, the furniture has all been robbed, and it's just a general mess. So, to this point, no one has lived in the villa since 1938. The owners of the property actually said they would give the property up for free as long as the property was restored. Being that the repairs would cost around 6 million euros, it was not really something anyone seemed up to tackling. Not to mention the avalanche in 2002 that literally wiped out all of the rest of the homes in the area, but somehow the villa remained standing. Now that seems like some spook shit. Like every other home, but that one? I don't know. Throughout the years, the villa has gained a lot of attention for its supposed paranormal activity, like the piano playing, but in actuality, the piano is busted to hell. Throughout the years, the villa has gained a lot of attention for its supposed paranormal activity, like the piano playing, but in actuality, the piano is busted to hell. A female voice is also said to be heard throughout the home as well. If you get the itch to want to check out this location, just know a few things. Firstly, going into the home is actually considered trespassing. Now, if you're still determined, no problem. Just be super careful. The home is definitely falling apart piece by piece. Going during the day is probably your best bet if you don't want to potentially be injured. There was actually a woman touring the home, and whilst on the second floor, the floor collapsed. The woman unfortunately did not survive the collapse, so just know you could die trying to explore this place. I will definitely be posting pictures of this villa because it looks crazy to see this beautifully designed home covered in all this graffiti and general dilapidation. That is all for the village, Devechi. I know it wasn't too crazy, but I still thought it was really interesting to learn about the home and the spookiness associated with it. Moving on, though, we come to the Velisca Axe Murderer House. Now, I will not be going into every detail of this murder, but I will overview it pretty well. If you want all the details, check out my sources at theveliscaiowa.com. The owner of the site did a lot of hands-on research to get this all together, and I appreciate that. Now, going into what actually transpired at the Velisca House, all the events in the precluding days events happened between June 9th and 10th, 1912. The family attended a Children's Day program that started at 8 p.m. They had earlier invited two of the Stillinger girls over to spend the night this evening. Now, I must say, this is extremely late for such an event to be occurring in the first place, just being that it's for children. It is, though, a different period of time, so I guess things were just a bit more laxed in that sense. Now, the program ended promptly at 9:30 p.m. The Moore family and the Stillinger girls walk home and arrive around 9:45 to 10 p.m. The following day, the neighbor Mary Peckman noticed that the Moore's house seemed awfully quiet. She did attempt to knock on the door, but no one answered, so she decided to contact J.B. Moore's brother, Ross. Ross arrives at his brother's home. He is also unable to make contact with anyone in the home, so he fiddles through his keys and finds he has one that opens the door, which low-key seems a little suspicious. He didn't try that first, but maybe he forgot. Nevertheless, they manage to gain entry and soon realize that something is off. He opened a bedroom door to find two bodies on the bed and blood soaked through the sheets. He beckons Mrs. Peckman to call the sheriff. The sheriff arrives and finds that everyone in the home has been brutally bludgeoned with an axe that was left at the scene, which actually belonged to JB. Nine people were murdered: Lena Stillinger, 12, her sister Ina, 8, Josiah Moore, 43, Sarah Montgomery Moore, 39, Herman Moore, 11, Catherine Moore, 9, Boyd Moore, 7, Paul Moore, 5. This horrific event divided the community because they were unable to find the murderer. Obviously, at the time, fingerprinting had just started to come about, so there wasn't much that could be done. Not to mention, the crime scene itself was super mismanaged, with over 100 individuals coming through the home to see the brutal crime scene and all the people in it, which is just weird to me. I have heard of this happening in an older case before, and I just find it really odd. For one, why do you want to go see a brutally murdered house with all of the people still in it? And why was the scene not cordoned off in the first place? The National Guard does arrive around noon to do just that, but by that point, the damage had been done. The case was never solved, and at this point, it's been more than 100 years since then, so whoever did it got away with it. This is not where the story comes to an end. In 1994, Darwin and Martha Lynn of Corning, Iowa, purchased the home. They returned the home to its original condition at the time of the June 10th murders. It is then listed on the National Register of Historic Places and is opened for tours. It will cost you approximately $428 a night to stay at the home and has become a hotspot for paranormal activity. Martha even says some of the things that happen in the home. They play with the children, they hear voices, they get pictures of anomalies. It's just generally spooky. It's been a hot spot for ghost hunters, mediums, psychics, all validating the paranormal activity occurring. Well, it gets even weirder here, so just stay with me. In November of 2014, Robert Stephen Lawrenson Jr., 37, was on a recreational paranormal tour. Everything was seemingly going well until he was alone in the northwest bedroom. The rest of his group were outside at the time, in which he radioed for help. Upon his companion seeking him out, they found him stabbed in the chest from a self-inflicted wound. 911 was called, and Larson was brought to the hospital and then helicoptered to Creighton University Medical Center in Omaha. The incident apparently occurred around 12:45 a.m., which was said to have been the approximate time of the murders in 1912. Lawrence had made a full recovery after the incident, but it said, out of respect for the family, he did not comment on the events that took place that night. I still find this whole thing very peculiar, especially noting that the home was seemingly a normal home until 1999. When the first paranormal investigators came through, they basically said the house was haunted and that they were going to find a killer. Obviously, that didn't happen, but it makes me wonder if all the paranormal investigations that occurred may have brought some shit into the house. Needless to say, though, the incident with Mr. Larson was very upsetting to Mrs. Lynn. She said, "It's publicity, but it's not exactly the kind of publicity you desire to have. I don't want people thinking when they come to the Velisca Axe murderer house, something's going to happen that's going to make them do something like that. I want them to have a good experience from the house, learn about the history, and if something comes about, then that's one up for them, I guess." Generally, though, it seems things stay pretty in control on the tours. Mrs. Lynn really wants the history and the story of the home to be preserved, and not so much of the paranormal craziness. Which is totally understandable, and I can definitely sympathize with her. She is 77 years old after all. I mean, probably a little older at this point, and I wouldn't want to have to deal with any craziness going on in a place that I owned. But that is all for the Velisca Axe Murderer House. We have one more story to round out this episode today, and that is the exorcism in August of 2016.